Good evening, everybody, and welcome in to our Predators pregame coverage. We are 1 hour away from faceoff. Tonight, the Nashville Predators are on the road to take on the Washington Capitals at the Verizon Center. Willie Donick here with you from the game studios in Nashville. I'm joined by Tom Callahan. He's standing by in the nation's capital. Predators coming in with a record of 17-11-4, 38 points. That's good right now for seventh place in the West. They have come off a big, big pair of victories at home. They've won five in a row all told, but a dramatic win 2-1 in a shootout against the St. Louis Blues on Saturday. 10 consecutive games have been sided by one goal with the Nashville Predators. The Capitals at 16-14-1, 33 points right now, slumping a bit. And, of course, they've already made a coaching change this year, and they've made a coaching change since the teams last met in Nashville several weeks ago. It is no longer Bruce Boudreau. It is now the former Capital, Dale Hunter, behind the bench for Washington. And they are coming off a 2-1 loss at Colorado on Saturday. And overall, they are 5-6 over their last 11 games. Let's check in with Tom Callahan. Dirk Hoge from onthefourcheck.com is going to join us here in a few minutes. And we've got a very special guest to bring on the air here in just a moment as well. Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and CBC. A very, very intelligent guest. And we're really excited to have him. Tom, welcome to the show.
I thought you were going to say we had an intelligent guy on the other end of the line, but that's okay.
Well, that too.
Thanks, Willie. I know. Thank you. Hey, you know what? I'm pretty fired up about this one, Willie. It's actually the first time I've ever gotten to broadcast a game from here at the Verizon Center. Usually we're in a versus exclusive window, so looking forward to it. And looking forward to it from a standpoint of Nashville is winning some games right now. Washington is struggling a little bit, and it's going to be a battle of the backups tonight. Anders Lindbach against Michael Neuvirth, and should be a pretty interesting hockey game.
And Dirk, welcome to the broadcast as well. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Willie.
So Dirk Hoge will be with us. And one of the things, through onthefourcheck.com, I got a chance to see Elliot Friedman's latest entry, where he goes basically around the league. But one of the headlines that he had was the situation between the Predators and their dynamic duo at the blue line, Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, still trying to lock them up to the long-term deal. Of course, Shea Weber is restricted at the end of the year. Ryan Suter probably the more urgent of the two, being unrestricted at the end of this season.
Yeah, and I think the major note that we saw in Elliott's column was the note that general managers around the league are paying close attention to the situation, and they may have put some of their major moves on hold while they're waiting to see, hey, is one of these guys possibly going to come available ahead of the trade deadline in February.
So we got a hold of Elliott earlier today. He's been nice enough to come on with us this afternoon. Elliott, thanks a lot for joining us here as we set the table for you.
Boy, I didn't know I was going on with three guys. I don't know I'm going to be able to handle all this. This is a lot to attack.
Well, Elliott, let's pick up on the point that Dirk just made there.
Sure.
You've got a lot of teams, as you pointed out, some big money teams that are looking to win right now that have the means and have the cap space to try to make a major move like that. And I think the quote from one executive you had was, hey, the Predators, if they wanted to, could get quite an auction going if they sort of said, hey, Ryan Suter and or Shea Weber might be available at the right price.
And that's true. I think there's a general feeling of that around the league. I remember very early in the season, I was talking to an executive about, you know, just what he thought about the year, and we were just, you know, as guys do, just talking about what the future holds. And, you know, he said that, for example, with Nashville, he was operating under the assumption that somebody was going to be available this year. And I said, well, did David Poile tell you that? He said, no, I know that they want to sign everybody, but I have to plan my business as if one of those two defensemen is going to hit the market. I thought that was pretty interesting. But, you know, it's kind of, you know, once Pekka Rinne signed, I think a lot of people began to wonder, could Nashville pull this off? And it's common knowledge that, you know, he's been talking to Suter's people for a couple months now. You know, he said in my phone conversation with him on Saturday that he's going to begin negotiations with Shea Weber again sometime in the new year. But, you know, there are a lot of really good teams with cap room: Chicago, San Jose, Boston, now Philadelphia, Detroit, of course, even maybe some of the surprise contenders like Minnesota. And, you know, I just get the impression, talking to a few people around the league, that all of these teams are waiting because if, and this is an if, Ryan Suter or Shea Weber were to become available on the trade market, I think it's absolutely true that if he did it before the deadline, David Poile could get a king's ransom for either player.
Elliot, we talked last during the summer after Shea Weber signed his one-year tender or arbitration award, I guess, $7.5 million. You mentioned that Shea Weber, and I think Ryan Suter probably falls into this same category. They're very close. They play together. They also want to see what other moves the Predators are going to make to become not only a team that makes the playoffs and does well in the first level of the playoffs, but a team that maybe can win the whole thing. Do you think that's a big factor here, especially in terms of Ryan Suter over the next few weeks? He'd like to see a little bit more of what's coming here. Can they get another top six forward, for example?
I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, the best players are your most competitive players, and I don't think anybody doubts how good Ryan Suter and Shea Weber are, and competitive players want to win. You know, they want to be paid handsomely, but either one of those guys, whether they stay in Nashville or go somewhere else, they're going to get paid handsomely. They know that. The other thing is they want to win. They really want to win badly. And, you know, it's kind of a vicious cycle for Nashville because, you know, if you want to win, you have to keep all three of those guys. And if you keep all three of those guys, it's harder to find top-end forwards because top-end forwards who score, they cost money. And, you know, that's a tough thing. You know, I do think that the toughest challenge that Nashville has in this is not whether or not the guys want to play there. I think Weber and Suter in a perfect world would be very happy to stay. The toughest challenge that Nashville faces is showing it can be a contender year in and year out, like Detroit's proven, like San Jose has proven. Like, for argument's sake, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia have proven. That is the biggest challenge.
Tom?
Elliot, I'm Callahan here. My question really is looking forward. You know you want to keep the big three, as they've kind of come to be known. But staring down the uncertainty of the CBA in a salary cap world, and just kind of seeing that some teams, it almost seems like, you know, some of the superstars this year, and we're playing the Capitals tonight, and you could almost circle these guys as a case, it almost seems better to go with more skilled, talented guys who aren't of your superstar caliber and try to get a couple of them. But can anybody really still build that way heading into so much uncertainty right now?
Well, I think you look at the uncertainty around you, but you have to play the cards you're dealt. And, you know, the thing is with Ryan Suter is that you can't wait until the new CBA happens because his situation ends before then. Weber is a little different, but Suter, I mean, the tough thing is that in Nashville, you know, the Predators have done a fantastic job building their team. They do everything the right way. They develop their players well. They draft their players well. They're patient. They compete hard. But at the end of the day, the most important thing to do for your fan base, like, you know, is keep your players, the players that you draft. You know, your fans, every time I write about Weber or Suter or even Rene before, I can tell by the comments I get or the tweets or emails I get from people in Nashville that they have a real emotional connection to these people, that they love the fact that these are born and bred Predators. I was at the draft in Tennessee where Suter got taken. I understand there's a connection, and that adds to it. This isn't just looking at three guys on your roster. This is looking at three guys who've developed into superstars, and they've been developed by your own organization. And that does make it harder. Anytime, and we've all been there in decisions in life we make, not only business but personal, anytime the heart is involved, it makes it that much more difficult. And in theory, what you're saying is absolutely right. It's tougher to do it this way. But when you have a born and bred superstar, and in Nashville you have three, it makes it more difficult because it's heartbreaking for the fans to see them go. And that makes Poile's job even tougher. If they do leave, he's going to have to sell it as, couldn't have kept them. And that's hard sometimes for fans to accept.
And I suppose the flip side of that coin is also, too, it really depends what you're taking in return and how that value is going to be perceived by your fans as well.
Well, yes, and I think generally the fans trust your management's judgment, and I probably would too, given its history. But I think the thing that really helps, sorry guys, I can't get over this cold, but I think the thing that really helps Poile, if he has to do this, the thing that really helps him is it's not a situation where he's going to only tell one or two teams. I think he's going to let a few teams know. It's going to get out. And what that does is, you know, like the other GM quoted in my article is, if he trades him before the deadline, there's going to be an auction. And nobody's going to come in with this as half-hearted. They're going to be making their best pitches because they know, number one, this is a great player they're going to get. Number two, they know if they don't get him, it's going to tip the balance of power somewhere else because another team that's already a good team is going to get him. If David Poile says, I'm putting one or two or how many of them on the market, then they're going to tip the balance of power in the playoffs in the Eastern and the Western Conference. And teams won't fool around with that. If he has to do it, he's going to get a lot.
Elliot Friedman is our guest from CBC Hockey Night in Canada. And we're talking about the Ryan Suter-Shea Weber contract dynamic, which, continues to become a little bit more of the storyline here. Dirk?
Yes, Elliot, this is Dirk Hogue from On the Forecheck. When you talk about the choice of, let's say David Poile does decide to put one of the two up on the trade market, that Ryan Suter is really the more portable of the two as a trade asset. He's got a much lower cap hit. Of course, he's on an expiring, unrestricted free agent contract. Can you talk a little bit about the portability of those two guys and how that might affect the return that Nashville might be able to get?
Dirk, I don't think it matters. I think that if either one becomes available, they will both be I think if David decided to do it, he would have no problem dealing either one because of the contract. These are A-level players. And the other thing, too, is you might actually be able to get more for Weber because even though he's a restricted free agent after this year, you do control his rights for another year. And I think, you know, if you're not given the opportunity to talk extension with Suter before they trade him, it's more of a gamble because you can't guarantee that if you acquire him, you're going to be able to keep him. The thing with Shea Weber is if they decide to go that way, you have him for another year and a half, so you can convince him that you have a better chance of convincing him and a longer chance of convincing him that that is the place to play. You have a greater chance of creating an attachment before he is able to hit the market, and some teams really do value that. So, Dirk, I don't think it matters that if he gets paid a bit more money. I think some teams will tell you that they'll have a longer time to convince him to stay, and that can be seen as more valuable.
Elliot, looking ahead here, one of the things the Predators have really made no secret of is they've set up their salary structure this year to take on a big salary to add that top six forward that would really help them. There were a lot of rumors that maybe for that brief time that Bobby Ryan was out there, that maybe the Predators were taking a look at that. Do you think a Bobby Ryan will come back on the market here in time? Maybe it's the Ducks. Maybe the now that even they've changed coaches, it's still not happening. Maybe that comes back to the surface, or maybe other top six forwards. Who might be out there that the Predators might be able to grab, and in turn that might influence a Suter or Weber?
Well, I do think if a top player was made available, that David Poile would take the chance. Absolutely. This is a huge year, and if he got a chance to add somebody, depending on the cost, he would do it. And you'll notice also that he did allude to, and I did mention this, that if they are in playoff contention, he probably wouldn't trade either of them. So I think the more likely scenario is he does try and add somebody. I don't know about Bobby Ryan. I think, the tough thing about that is Anaheim's going through a rebuild, and you've got a guy who scored 100 goals the last 3 years. Boy, those are the tough type of guys you don't like to give up. He's still young. His contract is reasonable for the production he has given. He was struggling this year, but, boy, it's early to give up on a guy like that. The one thing I always do, guys, is, if people ever ask who's available, the best thing to do is look at who's out of the playoffs, because teams rarely, who are still in the playoffs now, rarely give up on the season. So I think as we move closer to the deadline at the end of February, the key thing will be look at the teams that are out and who they might want to trade. Now, For example, Columbus has gotten off to that awful start, and people are talking about Rick Nash. But the GM, Scott Housen, is on record as saying they are not trading him. So take that name out of the picture. But if you look around, maybe like a team like Calgary or a team like Columbus, other players they might have available, those are the guys you have to look at. But do I believe that Poyle would rather hold on to both Weber and Suter and then go for a scoring forward to make a run? Absolutely. I think that would probably be his preferred move.
Elliot, as we let you go here, another sort of philosophical question, because we've talked about this before. As you build a winner, and I think it's pretty certain that a Ryan Suter, a Shea Weber, they want to see, can Nashville be a contender every year, like you said, a Detroit, a San Jose?
Yeah.
Can you be that team if you're only spending to the midpoint? I know the margin of error is probably low. Are they going to have to maybe go past that mark to really get all the resources they need into this?
Well, you know, you guys remember when Rene was signed, the executives there, including the guy who, I'm sorry, I forget his, temporarily I have a mind block, forget his name, who's running the team now.
Yeah, Tom Cigaran.
Tom Cigaran. They came out pretty seriously and said, we're going to spend. And I think that's what we're all watching to see. I mean, there's a big factor here, and that's the new CBA, and God only knows right now how that's going to change everything. But, you know, I think it is very hard. Like, if you watch any other sport, like, you know, you watch baseball, you look at the Tampa Bay Rays and a team like that, that's a team that's probably very comparable to the Predators in a different sport. But, you know, you constantly have to see them giving up on a lot of their players when it comes time to sign them to the big contracts and you're getting close to free agency. I think that's disheartening for a fan base. I think it's also tough for players. It's very difficult to create an allegiance to a team if you know once you get to a certain salary point, they have no choice but to trade you for somebody else younger and cheaper. I think ultimately you have to convince the players and the fans and the rest of the league that you are a destination, not a stopover. And, you know, Nashville is at that point right now. It's going to have to show that. And, you know, I think that is what they're going to try and do. I think they raised a lot of eyebrows in the NHL when they signed Pekka Rinne to that contract. I think it said a lot to a lot of people. And if they don't sign these two guys, I don't think it'll be for lack of effort. But the number one thing they still have to convince is, like I said a couple seconds ago, are we a stopover or are we a destination? And how do we convince people that we're a destination? You're always good. Now it's time to be always great.
Elliot, great stuff. We appreciate your perspective. We'll certainly be following you on Twitter and all of your material on Hockey Night in Canada. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure, guys. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right. Elliot Friedman, Hockey Night in Canada, CBC. Really, really good stuff. Certainly a lot to chew on there. So we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll sort of summarize some of the things he said, get Tom's take, get Dirk's take on it, and we'll get you ready for this one between the Predators and the Washington Capitals. Stay tuned. You're listening to our pregame coverage brought to you by Gary Force Acura and Absolute Vodka, cocktails perfected. Stay tuned. This is 102.5 The Game.